and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Church Answers.
It seems like since we started recording in the Church Answers offices that we have had bad weather every time.
Not today.
Is what is. I mean, look behind you at those little hills and the greenery that is there. A lot of light here.
It's gorgeous outside today.
It is,
and fall is finally here.
Yeah, we're here in the Franklin, Tennessee offices of Church Answers. Obviously, getting ready for the full retirement mode as we begin to move from Lifeway to Church Answers, and this is a first as well. I have never done a Q&A in the Church Answers office.
Okay.
And I have never done a Q&A where I've had a piece of paper in front of me because you won't share them with me.
No, it's more fun this way.
I have no clue what it's about. The only thing you told me is that William Vanderblumen and Vanderblumen Search Group are our sponsor on the front end.
Yeah.
So that's all I know at this point.
And Vanderblumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
Why don't I get to see the questions ahead of time?
Because it's more fun this way.
It's more fun for whom?
Me.
Okay.
So, you know.
By the way, Jonathan and I, as we are recording this, just returned from a trip to North Carolina, Rocky Mount, at North Carolina Wesleyan College.
I think that's the right name.
And our flight on the way back, which is booked, I upgraded Jonathan.
I got hooked up. That was nice of you. Thank you.
I upgraded Jonathan instead of me. So it's Southwest, so
yeah,
upgrade.
It's not upgrade. First. It's not, I just got to move to the front of the line.
It's not first class. It's just you just get to move a few feet up. But I just want you to know there was only one available, and Jonathan got it. So I'm just letting you know what a humble and generous guy I am.
You give.
I give.
You just give and give.
Thank you for giving to the Lord.
Yes, thank you. All right, so we got five questions here, and one of them is from a Jonathan, but not from me.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Well, and you got the time.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So I got to make sure we're okay on all fronts here.
Yes.
I can watch this, too.
All right, well, we've got the first question here comes from Matt, and he says.
I thought you said Jonathan.
Well, that's one of them. He's the
okay.
last question.
Okay.
We'll save the best for last.
Okay.
So, but Matt says, and this is a question I get a lot of times, and we don't often talk about this on Rainer on Leadership or the podcast, the blog.
Okay.
But he says, there are a number of examples of calling for a response at the end of a sermon. What is some practical advice on landing the plane and calling your congregation to respond to the sermon?
So, it sounds like Matt's talking about the invitation.
The invitation time.
The invitation.
And I guess it also varies depending on your denomination, depending on your tradition in the church or faith that you're
part of. Yeah, I was in the Baptist life historically, our denomination, not just our tribe, it has been called the invitation. It was actually popularized. Most people give the popularization of it to Billy Sunday and the Sawdust Trail, but it was actually popularized by Billy Graham.
Yeah,
as the time of invitation.
The buses will wait.
Yes, and he actually had some radio ministry, and otherwise it referred to the invitation. So that's where that came. Some call it an altar call, but I don't think Matt is just talking about some type of public response at the end of the sermon. It sounds like he's talking about how do I end this thing?
Yeah.
In a way that people can respond.
Yeah, how do you transition from here's what the word is calling us to do, become, and believe into now take action here?
Yeah, it really depends. And I added an adverb this time just so that we could be a little bit different. it really depends. It depends upon the nature of the sermon. If it is a highly evangelistic sermon where there is a gospel presentation, a gospel conversation that is taking place, it's often good to let people know, hey, if any of you are interested in knowing more about what it is to follow Christ, there are going to be some people in the room here. That person may be the pastor. It may be some elders. It may be someone else, but there are people here. They may have some type of designation. Some of them have a place that they go.
Yeah.
When I was a member at Brentwood here in town before I went to my son's church here in town, meaning the Nashville area, they always said, if you have any questions, come back to the parlor. That's
really?
The parlor. But it was a multi-use room, and it was, it was across the hallway from the worship center. And so a lot of people would come to the parlor. Some of them wanted to talk to the Pastor Mike. Some of them wanted to talk about a spiritual decision. So they gave them a place. Sometimes it's people, sometimes it's place. But then in other situations, you know, what if it's a sermon on growing in Christ? And the essence of it is one, this is the thesis that Brad Wagner discovered in his work on discipleship. The most common corollary of a growing disciple is someone who reads the Bible daily. Well, there may be some type of commitment that people can make. Hey, if you want to commit to reading the Bible daily with accountability, here's an email address. So there's different ways
you
to do it.
You can customize it based on what you want the response to be.
Exactly. Exactly. But there, most sermons have something where you want to land it some way. It may not always be a response from the congregation, but it simply may be, hey, maybe we just need to pray about this situation and you can pray while it's going on. Look at the sermon, determine, do they need to respond in a way that they're communicating back to leadership, or is it something where you can have a prayer time and wrap it in that way?
All right.
All right.
I like it. All right. Wally has the next one. He says, I have some members of the church I pastor who have asked me to go on vacation with them, all expenses paid. I want to know if there's any ethical issues with this and how it should be handled. These are members I spend a fair amount of time with outside the church. We ride bikes together, share meals together, etc. They're also leaders in the church. Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
Well, use common sense. So
there you
go. So first of all,
see, my first thought was it depends on where the vacation is too.
Yes. Well, first of all, does this have appearance of quid pro quo that they will get something in return for it?
Yeah.
If that is the case, return of a position in the church, return of authority in the church. If that's the case, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. If you're trading favors, it is wrong. But if it's just a favor, just because they like you and they want to
give appreciation gift type thing.
When I was a pastor in Birmingham, Alabama, I better not name the name because people start asking for his condo. I was about to give the name of the family, and I remember it very well. Every year, or not every year, he said, Tom, here's what I want you to know. I want you to know that you and your family have a week at my condo every single year. Mm-hmm. And it was at Seagrove Beach, right on 30A in the Panhandle. And
he was speaking your love language.
Oh man! And I took him up on it. But there was nothing that he suggested about anything in return. It was, I have a gift for you, and I gladly accepted the gift. In fact, if he would wanted to double or triple it, I would have gladly accepted.
And even though you're not his pastor anymore, you're glad to accept it now.
Yeah, so. I'm glad to know that Seagrove Beach turned out just fine with Michael coming through. It was one of them that did not get the brunt of the storm. So no, if there is a sense of inappropriateness in the relationship where you get something back in return for it, absolutely not. But if they're friends and you want to go on vacation and it's all paid vacation, by all means, why not? What is wrong with that?
And if we have any podcast listeners that want a gift to a certain podcast host, I will mention you on name. I don't have a problem with the quid pro quo on this one.
The only reason I'm not mentioning him by name is I just don't want people calling him up. And really, I have no idea if he still has the condo in Seagrove. So I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Well, by the way, he did tell me that I could continue to use it after I left. Awesome. I just didn't think it was right.
Yeah. That's fair.
If you're going to give up weeks, give it to the next pastor.
Yeah.
And so that was a decision I made.
Yeah.
So. I don't know if he did give it to the next pastor. But.
Well,
it
depends on if you liked him or not, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
All righty. Next question is from Jesse. He says, right now I'm looking at finishing up my last year of seminary, and I have my eyes out for potential ministry opportunities God might be leading me towards. Are there any warning signs I should be looking for when considering to pastor a new church? Any surefire deal breakers in your mind? It's like, Jesse, we only have 22 minutes here.
Well,
because we could list a few.
Let's don't talk about deal breakers to begin, and I will answer your question. Is it Jesse?
Yes.
I will answer your question, Jesse, to get to the specifics of what you ask in terms of are there deal breakers. Let's look at just some things to be on the lookout. First of all, we do not know your denominational background. We don't know how pastors are called. Or does he say?
No.
Okay.
He's in seminary. Based on a couple other clues in there, it's potential Baptist. I mean, it's going to be a congregational call type thing.
Okay, so it's going to probably be a search committee.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that you have to know is search committees lie. Okay, that's overstated. No, search committees typically overstate
yes.
the opportunity that's afforded the pastor. And the most common thing that you hear is,
we really want to change.
Yeah. Yes, we really... And they do as long as it doesn't affect them.
Yeah.
As long as it, so that's what you need to be able to filter the search committees. Now, deal breakers. Okay, let's talk about those, Jesse. If they have a doctrinal stance that is different yeah. from what you believe, that is a primary, secondary, maybe even a tertiary yeah. issue, you don't go there.
No, do not compromise your doctrine for a job.
That's just a very clear and poignant and powerful way of saying it. So if it is there, another thing, let me give an example. I know a pastor who had an opportunity to go to another church. And quite frankly, if I were to mention the church, most people would know this church. And it looked like a good opportunity. However, the elder board had made the executive pastor the lead pastor. And so the teaching pastor, which is what he would have been called to, was not going to be able to lead the church. All he could do was... Yeah.
So he was almost like a hired gun just to preach on Sundays.
And there's some people that actually would have liked that.
Yeah.
But he wanted to lead. And so their polity and vote by the elders precluded him from accepting that position.
Mm-hmm.
For him, that was a deal breaker.
Yeah. That's like philosophy of ministry.
There you go.
I mean, and this goes back to as well, like it, not just in a pastor sense, but in a age level, you know, a children's minister, preschool minister, even student ministry, even adult ministry, whatever it may be. If their philosophy of ministry at the church doesn't match yours,
then I mean, that can be a deal breaker.
That's something that you really need to think about. I mean, while that's not compromising doctrine, that's basically saying the way I do what I do will not be accepted at this church.
There you go.
I don't know if it's going to be worth it for you to take that kind of job.
Is Jesse married? Do we know that?
No, we don't.
Okay, let's assume Jesse is married.
Oh, already?
So, Jesse, if you are married, keep in mind this. The call of ministry, the call to the church may be upon you, but you need to know that your spouse is on board. You need to know that, okay, this will be a ministry that my spouse can invest in, will be happy with. Let me give you an example, Jesse. I was talking to a seminary student when I was a dean many, many, many years ago, and he said he was going to go, and he named the country where they were going to go overseas.
Huh.
I said, very good. And he said, but my wife hates it. She does not want to go. She said she does not want to go.
Well, you don't go.
He went.
Oh.
It lasted.
How'd that work out, Dr. Rainer?
18 months.
Yeah.
That's 18 months.
That's 17 more than I thought.
And one of the reasons was of this particular mission agency, it took them several months to even do the recall to bring them back. And the marriage was challenged. The process. I'm talking about compensation. I'm
uh-huh.
talking about the fact that.
Yeah.
I see you look. You see, y'all can't see.
It's a very familiar story, and I'm trying to think if I know the story.
Okay.
So, that's all.
We can talk.
There's a few. I know some people that have gone through that as well.
Well, this was when I was dean at Southern Seminary.
Yeah.
So you can put it back to them. So it did not work. They came back and. The marriage struggle for a while as a result. So another deal breaker is your spouse supportive or not? And if not, why? Why would you go to a place where one has a sense of call, the other does not?
All right. I figured it out. It wasn't your people. I know somebody that had a similar thing.
So okay. Cause
it just hit me who it was.
All right. And to my knowledge, I had not told you that story.
No.
Okay.
It's a different story.
Okay.
So this is a personal one that you wouldn't even know. So, but I mean, that is a That's one of those things when I heard that, though, that's the same thing I thought was, well, why did you do that if your wife wasn't on board and you knew that on the front end?
Yes.
It's like, you know, I didn't understand that one. So,
well, that was definitely the case here. And those are just some examples of deal breakers. Doctrine, significant philosophy of ministry, and lack of spousal support.
All right. Susan asks, or says, I guess, until recently, due to the additions of two new deacons who put a stop to this, our church elders freely gave out friends to just about anyone who would ask. Many thousands of dollars over the years given to people with no verifiable qualifications or ability to track where the money was going. This is benevolence, basically. Sadly, two of the elders recently quit and switched churches because they considered the new deacons to be harsh and non-compassionate, for wanting to put parameters in place for benevolence. How do other churches deal with benevolence ministry?
Two ways, and again, this is Susan.
Yeah.
Susan, sometimes they fully outsource it. There is a central community ministry. And they support that community ministry. That is the case for the most part with my church.
Oh, okay.
We support this community ministry, and when someone comes in and says we're looking for food, we're looking for money,
whatever.
We are giving money to this organization, and as a result, we point them there. Why? Because they know how to filter them. They know how to ask the questions. They know if it's a scam or if it's not a scam. So that's one
of the ones. They're prepared to handle this type of ministry.
That's what they do.
Yes.
That's all they do. And the church supports it as a result. Another way of doing this is if you keep it at the church to be trained. I have a trained group of people like those people in community mm-hmm. ministry so that you can have the same filtering process as well.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was not this way, but there are professionals that go church to church and ask for money. And I've seen them in action. Mm-hmm. I have actually seen them in action. And it is a good act. One time, this fairly recently, I saw someone pull out of a get out of a car, I believe it was a BMW, and changed their outward appearance, put some things on, and kind of messed up their appearance, and then walked into the church to ask for money.
Hmm.
It was a total scam. I just happened to see them in another parking lot, park there, and walk over to our church. So outsource it to community ministries that have that.
See, I didn't know those existed. I like that.
Yeah.
Not that the church shouldn't be benevolent or should be kind, but certain people or certain organizations are equipped for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you can partner with them and let them be a part of it, I mean, it just, that makes more sense than you trying to do everything and maybe, you know, missing the boat on some of these.
Yeah, and many times church members will say, well, I want to be a part of it. Well, guess what? You
volunteer.
Can volunteer.
Yeah, they would love to have volunteers, I'm sure.
You can give, you can volunteer, you can see it in action, you can learn.
Yeah.
Many of these community ministries are happy for churches to learn how to do it and to do the same type of thing within their church.
All right. Finally, from Jonathan.
This is Jonathan.
Yes, not me. All right. If you were designing the perfect work week for pastors, what would be the breakdown of time and tasks, assuming a 50-hour work week?
Okay.
So at least Jonathan's thinking 50 hours and not like, you know, 20.
Jonathan, I just got off of a coaching call in Church Answers and spent an hour with this guy that I've known for 2 or 3 years. And I like what he's doing. He is essentially, he's taken 53 hours. There's a reason for it, 45, and then there's another 8. I'm not going to get into the details without disclosing information from the coaching call, but he's taken 53 hours, and he's saying, I am going to give 53 hours a week to the church.
All right.
There may be some times that I'll go over and I will come back. He said, I've got to get more balance in my life. And so what he is doing is he's saying, how long do I need to prepare a sermon?
All right.
To do it. And so that's one piece of it. That's something he has to do every single week. What type of contingency? What is a typical week for someone to come in or there's an emergency that mm-hmm. goes on?
How much time does that take?
Yeah.
Contingency time.
So he puts his margin of contingency in there. And then he asks this question, what energizes me? Pastors can do a number of things, but there should be a number of hours set aside to just be energized. For me,
counseling.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, exactly right. I would, as little as possible. I would spend time to vision and strategize. And I could not wait to spend 4 or 5 hours a week.
You don't say.
Doing that.
5 hours a week. Wow.
Just dreaming about what we can do. And if I had a staff member, I'm thinking of Chuck Carter. Mm-hmm. You remember him? I'd love just to have strategizing and envisioning sessions mm-hmm. with him where we could talk about the future. And so you put all those blocks and then you say, okay, what are some things I must do?
Mm.
Okay. What are the meetings I must attend? You put mm-hmm. it there and all those pieces come together. He's asking for an ideal work week. And the answer is it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on how long you need for sermon preparation, mm-hmm. how long you need for margin. You know, if you're a young church, you may need less margin yeah. than an older church with funerals and whatever. How long do you need for those things that are going to energize you in the week that you want to? And then how long are you going to take? He said yeah. 50 here, and the other example was yeah. 53.
Calendar it out, too, and set, you know, that Tuesday afternoons are going to be my X, and Monday mornings are going to be my X.
Especially for preaching.
Yes.
Sometimes yeah. preaching is the leftover stuff.
Yeah, and that's not good. It needs to be the primary thing.
Yeah. So these were good questions.
I actually
enjoyed all of them, so thank you. And now can I look at the piece of paper?
Yes, you can.
So thank you, Matt, Wiley, Jesse, Susan, and Jonathan. Did they get prizes?
They get a book. They get a copy of Scrappy Church.
Scrappy Church is yes. now out and released.
Yes, so we will send that to them.
All right. And also, thank you for training people to do the work of ministry. We answer the questions, but you train the people to do the work of ministry. So thank you, Midwestern Seminary.
At just 81 hours, the Midwestern MDiv will give you a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church, or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your ministry training today at mbts.edu/mdiv.
I multitask. I actually found the couple
that
I was talking about.
Gotcha.
I wanted to see if they were still... They are. They're still married.
Excellent.
So thank you again for joining us on Rainer on Leadership.
Yes. Thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.